Hi there, everybody. Alex Simmons here. Without my wonderful compadre, companion, co-host Chris Ryan, because life has a tendency to go every now and then. Guess what? You're not going this way. You're going that way. This particular week was just filled with a lot of, shall we say, unexpected changes in direction. Chris had appearances. I had some things to take care of, some assignments to take care of. The New York Comic Con is taking place. A number of things are going on this week, and we just could not coordinate with our guests and everything to sit down and record the next wonderful episode of Tell the Damn Story. So what we decided to do instead was reach back to one of our previous episodes, and it's a good one, darn good one. You're going to get a portion of it. Episode 191. And this was called Learning with Eyes Wide Open. And it really talks about what helps us become the creatives that we are. I don't mean just Chris and I, but creatives in general. How things that we went through in our childhood, in our teen years, in our young adult years, how those things impact and mold a lot of who we are. Not only as people, obviously, but also as creatives, whether or not we're hesitant about putting the work out there or egotistic about it or whatever. So this particular episode, you'll get a little peek into Chris's background and my background, because yes, we were born, we did grow up, and it did help formulate the two people that you've been listening to all these many episodes. Here it is, a new episode of Tell the Damn Story, taking a look back at a portion of one of our previous episodes about the things that help us become the creatives we are. Enjoy.
Doing more of writers and writing communities on Twitter and trying to get out the noise and get in the stuff that I can. Right. And it's working. You can curate, ladies and gentlemen, you can curate your own Twitter world. Many people have done that to the detriment of America, but you can do it in a positive way. Ran across these people that were announcing an anthology. And I read when the deadlines were, and it was like 2020. And so I wrote to them in the message, are these dates correct? I'm not quite understanding. And they were cool enough to say two things, not just, yeah, this is the end. This is the ad from last year. We're announcing that the anthology is finally coming out despite all the world pandemic. Not only did they send that, they also sent, but we got you, bro. And they sent us a link, sent me a link to current calls for submissions. Oh. I was so impressed with their generosity that I said, let me see if I can do something for them. This is called divinationhollow.com. Very cool place, very cool site. And the first call was Pride in Horror Month. And it was gay pride in horror. And they had a little video on how to do things and all the stuff. And it was, the deadline was yesterday. When I got this Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday.
Yesterday being what date, just for reference?
May.
Okay.
Yeah. I was so impressed with their generosity. Generosity is important, and to be welcoming is always an impressive thing to me, that I wanted to find a way to thank them. And as she always does, Stevie popped up.
A character from Genius High. Yeah.
Character from Genius High. When I was in the second, third, fourth chapter, maybe fifth chapter, when we finally get to the high school, Ignatius Bop was a character to be explained in another episode. God, what a great character. And the name comes from a gravestone in St. Raymond's Cemetery that I saw. Since I wanted to name a character that since I was a kid. He's taking some of the freshmen on a tour of the school. And wanted to show what I see as a high school teacher. I wanted to show all the cliques, all the different groups, all the different stuff. And one of the people I included in there was Stevie. And the reason I included Stevie in there, Stevie is has transitioned. She identifies as she, her, and is fantastic with fashion. Because you can learn anything on YouTube. You really can. But the idea was to see her once, and then she'd be in with one group or the other. That was it. And the reason I wanted her in there was because I had just experienced the latest kid who was transitioning in my school. Now that we've seen some glorious transition. One girl, identified as girl, one female. She transitioned, and she went on to be one of the leads in Rent. fantastic. She was
the Broadway show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was the spring musical in the high school.
Okay.
Completely in her element in that play and did a fantastic job. But she used to go to class with these big boots, the high heel boots with no back heel. She just had to lean forward. It was fantastic. And she was just 100% there. And you know what? The rest of the world can deal because I'm here. It was just breath of fresh air.
But you've seen the other side of it.
Yeah, I saw this one particular kid. When you get your master's degree, you study all those years, you get your master's degree. One of the things that you're given as part of the teacher is hallway duty because you can really use your master's degree there.
You got to have a master's to be a hallway monitor. Okay, got it.
So I was in the hallway.
Who'd have thunk it?
Down in the basement, some real, I just leave it alone, but this guy's an old-fashioned thinker. Mm. And he saw the glory of the art rooms up by the English wing, where the doors were painted like Van Gogh, and they took all the ceiling tiles and they had kids paint paintings on there. So the root ceiling, as you walk across campus leading to the art rooms, was an art museum. It was beautiful. He furious. This is that. And they were playing music and kids were moving around the room and they were just like having fun. Hell, there'll be no fun in school. He made that school transfer those art classes into a basement set of classrooms behind the custodian's rooms. Yeah, I hate, and little by little, they disappeared.
The artwork from the tile.
Sorry. Yeah, it's all little art now. It's just sad. And if anyone's at my school and want to get mad with me, I look forward to your cards and letters. Because it's true. I'm not saying a damn thing that's not true.
But you were talking about deviant. Yeah.
So in that basement, that's where my hallway duty was. And every day this one kid came out. And he was still he. He hadn't transferred over to she, but he was crying. So it would be a long flannel shirt and tight pants that could be like tights. Or tights underneath it eventually was the big step forward, or a blousy shirt, but jeans underneath. She was really having a hard time and walk the wall where the lockers were and try and press himself and then herself as she transitioned a little more into the wall.
That's to be unseen, unnoticed.
Oh, God, it was heartbreaking, heartbreaking, heartbreaking. And then she disappeared. No more in the school, disappeared. And it was even more painful. And this is why Stevie was born, to reach out to kids in that kind of pain. Great ending to her story.
The real person.
The real person.
Okay.
Disappeared for 3-4. I don't know what was going on. Homeschooled or whatever. Or a teacher would travel to the school. And then I was also the journalist at the time. The journalism teacher, besides other things. And we were putting our graduation issue together. So I would get whatever was left over from the yearbook. And I'm going through some of the prom pictures. And it's one prom picture. It's almost like that last picture in The Shining. Closer and closer. And
yeah.
But instead, this picture is everyone's dancing and leaning into the camera. And in the center, in a glorious emerald gown, full makeup, fully transitioned, the only time I ever saw her smile. There she is.
So the same character who had been trying to become invisible disappears for 4 months. And then the next time and the last time you see them is in that photograph and they fully transitioned.
Yeah.
Wow.
And ironically, she was as stylish as Stevie. But Stevie was already born by then. So it was just a confirmation I was going the right direction.
Yeah.
All right. So back to Divination Hollow. And
from that story, I forgot about the reason for the story.
Okay. And they're a great site and they're great people. So you should go and give them their support, your support. Okay. So they offered this call for submissions for Pride in History. And it's Pride for LGBTQ+ or allies. I'm not the most vocal ally in my way in stories, especially with Stevie's involved. And I had this story of Stevie's first date. It was 5,000 words. They needed 2,500. So I had to cut it down a lot. Ignatius Bop was in it. But again, they didn't have the time. So I said, what would be pride in horror? What would be her horror experience? And honestly, I said, the horror part of the date where their second ever kiss, this guy, Peter, who was cis leaning, he's trying to pass as cis, but he's gay. And he falls for Stevie. And who couldn't? She's such a nice person. So they kiss on her front porch. She walks her home. And the next day, he's all nervous and all this stuff and walks out of the classroom before her. And she pursues. And she confronts him in a theater hallway. And she says, we didn't do anything wrong. It's okay that we kiss. And he goes, no, that's not what it's about. He goes, isn't it though? He says, no, it's the next thing. And she says, yo, slow your roll, big fella. And he gets all more flustered. He's like, no, oh my God. I am trying to ask you to be my girl. And she says, silence is politics. And someone put that romantic filter from Instagram all around us. And then, you know what I did? I leaned up and I kissed that boy right there in that hallway. Like everything was perfect. And I wanted that. And they described the kiss as being a little more the first one, and then I go back a little more urgently. And she wanted it to stretch out to heaven. The very next line is fans, and three jocks come, and it's the horror. It's, you know, it's the horror thing. That would be horror. And what I don't realize, or what I didn't realize, and what Divination Hollow was so cool about.
So you submitted it to them, and they read it.
I sent it on Friday.
Okay.
This morning, right before we got on, they sent me this, and they're saying, this is really good, but it's unfortunately, we can't use it. And here are the reasons why. Just, that particular part is something that we try and not force our readers to re-experience. Mm-hmm. That makes crystal clear sense. And only a cis guy like me who sees it from a distance wouldn't have realized that at first. So that was my first education. And then they're generous enough to go through a little more of the story and say, this was a little wrong. This was a little, this. And if you want, so-and-so would be willing to give you more of an education. Tell me that's not the coolest rejection ever. So I wrote them back immediately and thanked them and acknowledged that I see their point. And Stevie were much more positive, much more. She was fully transitioned and nearing this high and very comfortable with herself. But I was trying to figure out what her biggest horror would be. Of course, I made that mistake.
Well, it's funny because, not funny, haha, funny, ironic, because you as a writer pursued exactly the proper path in exploring the character and exploring their life and looking at their life and then saying, what would be a horror? What would be this? What would be that? And absolutely, just like when we've talked about as men, we've never been women. And so we, you know, when we write female characters, just a lot we don't know. We had to do our homework. I think that, again, recognizing that and acknowledging that, oh, you're right. I didn't know this. I didn't know that. Cool. That's great on your part. And then on their part, for them to say, and we're willing to school you, is great.
I immediately accepted that. Hopefully they will, because I think there is more. Stevie's still talking to me. So I think there still is more, but you have to do it well. And you have to do it right.
You have to want to do it well. And just as this is an episode, and we could keep going on this, I want to actually use this to,
let me just say thank you, Divination Hollow, and I will send them an email and say we spent the first 10 to 20 minutes talking about them because they are that cool. DivinationHollow.com. Go check them out. See if they are for you. They're horror and dark horror, dark science fiction, all that sort of stuff. but they seem extremely cool and worthy of a checkout. So there you go.
Okay. That's very cool.
Usually we do a commercial to open up. In lieu of promoting all these books, Black Nerd Problems and Infinitum with Tim Fielder,
and
Albert Scheming Where I Am, and Black Panther Tales of Wakanda Where You Are, and Footnotes Where Cassim Gaines Is. But in today, that promotion was
Divination for Hollow.
Divination Hollow, because they are damn cool.
Interesting. Divination, damn cool. Okay, good. But let us segue actually from what we were talking about and the story that you shared into the other portion of today's show, which has a lot to do with perception. I think not really given we don't acknowledge the power perception, our perception of things has on what we do and how we do it. I was telling you, because we always have these pre-show, these pre-production conversations, right. And I was telling you, right,
pre-production.
Yeah, that's right. We, the staff comes in and we all sit, all two of us.
Tell a damn story writer's room.
Yeah, where the two of us sit around a table. And I was telling you about the perception of writers who become entrepreneurs online and how that has been explored and experienced, and some have soared and some have crashed and burned over the decade or so that online entrepreneurship has exploded. And I was thinking about this because sometimes I explore some entrepreneurial pursuits and things like that. And I was attending a conference not too many days ago, and thousands of people, literally thousands of people. And I was looking at the reactions that these people had. They want to share, they want to teach, they want to coach, they want to sell a product, they want to do something where they have more control of their income and their lives and pursue their dreams. A lot of them are about pursuing a dream or a calling or having more time to spend with their family so they're not doing their 9 to 5, which always turns out to be like 7 to 7 because of travel or whatever else. And as I was looking at their wants and their whys for doing these things and their dreams, I was also looking at what creatives go through when we want to write that book, want to write that play, have that story, that poem, that composition of music that's in us that we want to get out, and we want the world to see it, and we want the world to accept it, and we want to be able to make a living at it, and it's our dream. And the things that lead up to us trying to pull it off, trying to accomplish it, and how perception, the sense of ourselves, how we see ourselves, and then our worry about how others see us or the thing we're going to create, how much that impacts on our potential success and our success. And so I wanted to explore that a bit today, because there's a lot of, whether you're going to be trying to sell your books or your screenplays to somebody else to produce, or you're thinking about producing it and publishing it yourself online or whatever, there is the first step of getting up the courage to take a shot at it, then actually creating the property and going through the process of creating it and getting it out in front of somebody or several somebodies to get feedback. And then, as with you, Chris, reaching a point of where you're sending it out, not just for feedback from friends or an editor or whatever, but from potential buyers or publishers. And how do you deal with rejection if that's what comes back your way, and how many times? So I wanted to actually ask you a couple of things, and then I'm going to obviously share some things too. But first off, you've talked about from time to time some of your experiences in your youth as a young kid, full of ideas and imagination and creative storytelling with no clue what the process was and all of that. There's that normal aspect of the child trying to figure stuff out. But then there was the influences around you.
Sure.
And I'm just curious if you could share just in a few minutes here, some of the influences that might have impact on your perception of yourself and creativity and the value of it at that time, or the validity of it.
Well, the instinct that I always had, and again, it, you were sneezing before, this season is lethal to so many of us, right?
Yeah.
And as a child, I've said before that it would knock me out so much that all I could really do was read, listen to music or read. And that opens up the imagination. So I would go with it. And whether it was the latest heavily plagiarized story or song lyric that sounds exactly like the song that was on the radio while I was writing or whatever, there's, you know, that early on, I'm talking from 8 to 14, that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Or first time, me and my three notes, my three bass notes that I could play, was joining a band. And I took the living room window shade, which was like 6 foot by 8 foot. And I painted on the entire window shade.
Painted on the window shade.
Yeah, because we got a new one. So I said, don't throw the old one out and give it to me. And I painted this enormous wizard, arms extended, bolts of Marvel style bolts come out of the hand, all that crap. Also saved me from growing hands. I bring this out to my parents, and I had two very, very different parents. My father was, they both grew up through their childhood was the Great Depression and World War II. That was their childhood.
Oh my God. Yeah. The '30s and 40s.
Pandemic. Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Great Depression and World War II. Their high school years was World War II. And they graduated June of 45, and my father signed up, and the war was over. It was peacetime in Japan. So yeah, that's experience. So he's a civil service guy. He was a cop for 28 years. He's always get a job that's going to be there for you, right? Job, Baltimore Catechism job. And my mom, God bless her, she had mental issues and emotional issues. I'm not sure whether it was bipolar or egocentricism, but there was a mixture of the both. So here I am coming out with the wizard.
So on a window shade.
I've done backdrop. Great. All three notes. I'm unrolled this thing. And yeah, I'm extending as high as my hands could come. And the thing goes down to the floor, right? And I show it to him, and I can't see their reaction. And I bring it down, and my father's, did you get paid?
Oh, jeez.
And my mom is making this face. All she can really see is the window shade. Why did you ruin the window shade?
That they were going to throw away.
We go, yeah, yeah. What? And does this reflect on us somehow? And you, except for one or two people who got me, the rest were like, you walk past, they would sing, I'm just a singer in a rock and roll band. Whatever, you know, it's the Bronx. Everybody abused everybody, right? So I lived in a family that predominantly said no, in a community that predominantly said hell no. And you know, except for one or two people. Like, I had this one guy, Roger, still a friend of mine, and he would hand me novels to read like we were doing a drug deal. We would be off to the side, and he'd reach into his jeans jacket and pull out, like, Kurt Vonnegut, Sirens of Titan, and say, hey, check this out. And I'd put it in my, and act like nothing happened until I got home, you know? That's
the kind of perception, crazy. Perception.
So in that, if you're in that kind of thing and you're still a dreamer, you're looking for someone to say yes. And that leads to our next thing, I think.
Well, it does. I will not counter that, but I will just add my two cents to say that not until the past couple of years in particular have I consciously realized how blessed I was in my upbringing, because I did not have a mother, didn't get it. My dad wasn't in the picture at all, but I didn't have a mother who didn't get it. She just basically wanted to make sure that she stopped getting the reports from the teachers that I'm a great kid, but I'm daydreaming all the time. But she was talking to me about that. He's always sitting at the window, looking out the window. His eyes are looking at the ceiling. He's such an intelligent boy, but he's always daydreaming. Yeah, he's a nice boy. He's a polite boy, but he's never conscious.
We don't know where he really is.
What is he on? What is he on? Other than that, she never got reports that I was acting up or terrorizing anybody. And I got plenty of paper. whether it was loose leaf or line paper, and I was drawing like crazy and making up stories, and I had action figures, not dolls, action figures. I had action figures that I was constantly living adventures with, acting out adventures with. And it was the thing. It was, and I watched movies and I watched cartoons, and my imagination was going bonkers. And I had a couple of neighborhood buddies who we would go to either Central Park or Riverside Drive Park and run around being nuts, you know, reenacting whatever. But there was no conscious time where I was put down for that. What I felt made me stand away from or stand out or be ostracized in some way, shape, or form was the poverty. I was in a middle school. Now, first, I was in elementary school that had middle class families all around it. And I was in what they called the IGC class, intelligent and gifted class. I had them completely fooled. And I was, I think, for three or four grades, I was the only Black kid in my class. And I was the only kid who didn't have a father. And I was the only kid whose mom was on welfare or social assistance. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the Hector Heathcote lunchbox with the thermos and the apple and the freshly made sandwich wrapped in wax paper. And I had the school lunch and I had all these. So that was where I began to feel less.
Yeah.
And that affects you. So you go into your imagination.
Right. Oh, yeah. We were what you would call lower middle class or working poor or something like that. I don't know. So my father worked. My mother didn't always work. And clothes would show up. Somehow they scraped enough money because my mom wanted to say to all her girlfriends that she had a child in Cardinal Spelman. So I got very much pushed to go into that school. Turned out to be a good school. God bless it.
But you also had siblings. I didn't.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I got these clothes. So I go to Spelman in proper attire. And the first week I'm walking down the hallway and plaid double knit bell bottoms.
Oh, God.
And I hear an upperclassman say, "Whoa, look, there go my pants."
Oh.
He lived up the block from me.
Oh.
And my mother knew his mother. And she said, "Oh, he wore these all to Spelman. And never told me."
Oh, man.
My entire wardrobe was that kid's clothes.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How does this impact on?
Well, because you want
to. No, I wasn't asking. I was
actually. You want to be accepted. You want to.
Yeah. You want to be accepted and everything. And if you don't feel accepted in a young period in your life, at a young time in your life, that leaves a mark. That chisels away a little bit at the foundation that's being constructed at that point in your life. And you build on that cracked foundation.
A common denominator with writers is that the reason we write is that some foundation is cracked somewhere. You know? So it makes us susceptible to what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So again, you get into the business of trying to promote yourself as a writer or trying to figure out if you're going to be a writer. And again, there are other types of creatives, but we're focusing on writing right now. You start exploring writing maybe in high school or college you're writing, but you're thinking about at some point, I want to write a book or I want to write a play or I want to be a writer. And yet you're also building on these insecurities. Now, whether or not, because this is, you and I are from a different generation. All right. There were more gatekeepers back in the day. You had to go through publishing houses. You had to go through agents to get to the publishing houses. You had to have something to show to get to have an agent pick you up to then take you to the publishing houses. And then you had a certain number of publishing houses that if they didn't want your stuff, that was it. Doors closed, into the trail, forget about it. Now with the internet, And all of the availability of getting your material out there, the gatekeepers have less control over the arena. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's a whole nother discussion. But now there's the flood of possibilities. But again, how well do you do it? How good are you? How committed are you? How consistent are you? These become the new questions. And I think, again, building on the cracked foundation of how am I even worthy? That's a flaw you've got to face. It's you've got to work and you've got to address. And so again,
there's another gatekeeper in that there's millions of people who put out books.
Oh, yeah.
Whether they're good or not. And that hurts your book from being seen, even if it's the best of the lot.
Right. Because the challenge is how do you get in? And then that gets to promotion. But before we even get there, there's the step of stepping up to take the challenge of creating something to put it out there. So just even that step, am I good enough? Are my ideas good enough? Is anybody going to want to read this? It's probably stupid. I'm never going to this. I'm not as good as so. And we go through those things. And again, it's chipping away. So one of the things is that we need to give ourselves permission to play in our creative imagination. We need to say, it's okay, man.
No matter what the neighborhood or the family said.
And I even use the word play because I know some people go, I got to work hard at this and it's going to be hard work and I got to keep working on it. And yeah, and that it there is work involved. Absolutely. But when you focus on work, like you did, get a job, get it. When you focus on that, sometimes that's intimidating. Sometimes what you're hearing is it's not real work. You're hearing one of those other voices, right? Allow yourself the time and the freedom to play in your creative imagination, to have an idea, to throw it down on a sheet of paper or on your digital screen and knock it around and smack it up and dabble with it and brain drop, brain dump as the phrase goes, or mind map other ideas around that theme and then see what fits and what doesn't fit and then play with, because once again, it may feel like it's your whole life or life and death, but it's not. It's not yet. It is about you giving yourself permission to explore you and to be you and to express you. And what level of quality isn't really the first question. It's can you tell that story? Can you get that story out of you and onto a surface so that you can see it, you can hear it, you can look at it? And then depending on where you want to go from there, you take the next logical step. Like I said, we will talk about that in another episode more in depth. More in depth. Yeah, Chris, it's been great.
Great with you, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah. We've got some good stuff out of this.
Yeah. And everybody, again, stay tuned because it's only going to get better.
Straight.
Take care, buddy.
Peace, everybody.
Hey, you're back. And actually, no, I don't smoke, but this little item is a part of my growing up years. I was a big fan of Sherlock Holmes, and I've read a lot of mysteries and watched a lot of films and television shows about detectives. So that's a big reason why a lot of what I write has to do with mystery stories and fictional heroes of that type, and why I even teach mystery writing workshops. And this is actually from a play that I wrote, a Sherlock Holmes play, which is another story. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode and that look back on some of the things that helped Chris and I become the people that we are and the writers that we are. I also hope that it helped you in some way, shape, or form to feel a little bit either better about the things you've gone through, the choices you've made, or maybe get you to thinking about that and help you move forward even easier, better, smoother as time rolls on. But either way, Chris and I will be back next week. And also, the next couple of weeks, we have some really great guests lined up. Please be with us next week. Until then, take care and continue to tell your own damn story.
What, son?